That's good. Tama, how David, how you feel?
I'm good.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. A little silly though, huh?
Kind of cute.
Little low key, you have the giggles.
Yeah.
That's good.
Know. It's late.
It is late, but I'm so excited about all of our guests.
But wait, I like it when you do you read the bio, but you're really mysterious about who the person is.
I know. Well, I have no formal introduction per se.
You don't need no introduction.
Well, I do want to say this about our
illustrious, mysterious
guest, a singer, songwriter, producer. The Mind is our guest today on the Corner Store. I mean, you have a lot of credit. I want to say this about it. Just, I feel like you are one of my favorite singer-songwriters whose pen game is for real. And one of the ways that I knew this is because we did a Chicago Next spot at the Soho House, and your set that night was a display not only of like Frank Ocean and it meets like I don't know. I feel like there's a real richness in the lyricism, but also the smoothness that this man displayed that night. He had the whole space. He had like hundreds of people like having to fan themselves because it was so heated. So without further ado, The Mind, thank you so much, man, for
thank
coming
you guys
on
for having
the
me.
Corner
thank
Store.
You, thank you.
We're about sound effects, right?
Yeah, we love sound effects.
Okay. We got sound
that
effects.
Was a lame clap, but like.
Blah. Blah, blah. Well, we'll work on our sound effects. Yeah, anyway, so you know, one of the things about coming to the Corner Store is we do have some gifts for you right away.
For sure.
Some yes, delicacies, some snacks. Hey. Tar, where do these particular items come
Should
from?
Should I not be shouting out where I got it from in this instance?
You can.
7-Eleven and Wicker.
Bootleg ass Corner Store. Anyway, the point is, sluice them.
Expensive ass Corner Store.
Expensive, yeah. Actually, not a Corner Store.
Right. Actually, yeah, you're right.
We have for you a delicious Reese's peanut butter tree. I don't know what that is.
It's shaped like a tree.
It's a tree. But it's a tree for the holiday season?
Yes.
Okay.
Damn, this was $1.39.
Damn.
Was it?
This is crazy.
Also,
exactly.
I feel, are we trying to kill our guests? We have some jalapeno cheddar, crunchy corn, kernel, corn nuts.
That's
yeah, it's a Corner Store.
I know.
See, these are my favorite.
See, I had to buy those. They were expensive.
These are dope.
But I had to get them.
These are dope. I actually want to I want to taste these. These are trolleys?
Trolleys.
Sour, bright, weird beard, James Harden edition.
Yes. Shout out.
And those look amazing. I actually want to take
Shout
a picture of that bag. That's
Shout
amazing.
Out Lil B for the...
You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Well,
more for the curse. That was funny. That was a funny curse. Sorry.
True. Salutes to you on the snack game, actually.
Yeah, you
tonight.
Went crazy.
Yeah.
These are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm look waiting. At his face on the front.
No, those
bugged
are amazing.
Out ass eyes.
So those are yours to, you know, yeah. do with what you wish.
I appreciate
at
it.
At some point, if you do open the James Harden.
Okay, he really just wants you to open it.
I'm definitely about to open the James Harden.
All right,
one.
Bet.
So you got to do the sound effect where you like, oh, yeah, oh, that's yeah. nice. You know, I'm really down. With this.
It's oh, so yeah. you know it's real.
Right?
You don't want
to I do.
Actually, we're not just like yeah. reading off from a piece of
oh,
paper.
Oh, my God. I'm nervous. I will say this.
It's interesting.
It doesn't exactly look like James Harden.
It
looks
anything.
Like
it's a glob.
It looks like
there's a little nose.
Look at the nose.
Look from the side view, the profile.
If anything, it looks like a dual primary jeweled Santa Claus.
it looks like a blob.
Slash a blob. It's also not sour.
It's not.
Also,
but,
I can't
but
really
look at
make
the,
a sound.
Taking up a lot of space.
But if you see the one on the,
I know it's
packaging.
Popping. He's got a mouth.
Y'all lying.
It's crazy.
Anyway, it's delicious. So,
pretty good.
The Mind. So curious. So you, as a child, as a younger The Mind.
Mm-hmm.
did you have favorite foods, snacks? What would you eat as a younger person?
As a younger person. Well, I grew up in Philly, so my
hence the hat.
Exactly. My after school treat was a cheesesteak platter.
What?
With double fries. Yeah, that was
that sounds like a ginormous after school.
It yeah, was that sounds crazy. Like dinner, but you know,
nah, it was,
for
it,
many
it was,
people,
it's right.
like it's a cheesesteak platter. Explain to Chicagoans what
yes.
a cheesesteak platter
Layman's
is. A
cheesesteak platter consists of first of all, if you got it, you had to get it from my deli that was on my corner. This correlates.
Hey.
With, you know, on so brand. On brand.
Exactly. Yes. So it was a corner store on the corner of my block called DNS. And it had, there was a dude in there, Kurt. He made the cheesesteaks. If Kurt wasn't there, don't get a cheesesteak platter. Right. Get something else. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Big but, ups, Kurt.
Kurt was Kurt is cold, man. He'll probably hate that I'm mentioning his name. He hates.
Wait, but you still talk to Kurt?
I don't. But if I go back to Philly, he doesn't work at DNS anymore. He works at Pagano's, which is down the street.
At least you know where he is.
Yeah, yeah. I have to. You know, he has the best steaks in the city, in my opinion. But so a cheesesteak platter would consist of the cheesesteak, and it would usually be a side of fries and coleslaw or coleslaw mac or anything weird, something weird on the side. That's why we would always get double fries. You know what I'm saying? You can get double cheese fries, but then you was going a little crazy because I'm lactose intolerant. So,
oh, no.
But the Philly cheesesteak got cheese.
And the cheese fries.
You got it without cheese?
No, I would still get it with cheese. Okay. I'm brave. I'm out here.
You taking some lactate? No?
No, I was just out here.
That's like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, you know, but I didn't,
not so much.
I didn't know that that's what was, you know, messing up my stomach.
Yeah.
I had no clue that.
Wait,
was
so it's like an open face or it's like?
No, nah, it's closed. It's okay. Wrapped up in like almost like a, what's the paper? Like a wax paper.
Oh, true.
Yeah, it's super, super
hoagie bread.
Yeah, exactly.
True. Like the I never had one.
Amoroso's bread. If your cheesesteak is not on Amoroso's breads, it's not
playing
a real
yourself.
Cheesesteak. Yeah, you know what I mean?
So is that like a bakery mayonnaise. Or is that?
Amoroso's?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a bread and bakery place in Philadelphia.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? So, salt, pepper, ketchup, mayonnaise on the steak. You know what I'm saying? You say it just like that. If you don't, then
say
they'll
it again.
Know. Salt, pepper, ketchup, mayonnaise.
Salt, pepper, ketchup, mayonnaise.
Like one word.
I know.
It's one word.
Salt, pepper, ketchup, mayonnaise on the steak. You know what I'm saying?
Can you make a song and just call it that?
Salt, pepper, ketchup, mayonnaise.
Yeah.
At least salt, pepper, ketchup.
Yeah.
Salt, pepper, ketchup is like.
And then the next song could be mayonnaise.
It is.
You could just make
salt,
the next song mayonnaise.
Right after that. On the album.
Salt, pepper, Tara wants a writing credit.
Listen, I'm an A&R, basically.
Listen, I just. No, but that was it. And then you would get like a kiwi mystic, strawberry kiwi mix. I mean, a kiwi mystic, strawberry kiwi mystic, or Arizona. And
like you had to.
You had to. That was
like that flavor.
That's what it was. You know, what I'm saying?
Helps the medicine go down.
Exactly. Yeah. You know,
true.
What I'm saying, it was all terrible, but it was.
What side of Philadelphia?
I grew up in North Philly, but I moved around. I was in foster care, so I moved around. So I was North Philly, then I went up to almost Northeast. It's like West Oak Lane, Mount Airy, and then that's where I grew up, I guess, until like 17, 18, and then I moved to Chicago.
Okay, we'll get there.
Yeah.
But what was Philly like, especially because Philly has such an incredible tradition of music.
And it's crazy.
And given
music
that you make.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Shout out Cornbread. Shout out like Roots, Jill Scott, the Black Lily, like
was,
all
like, the
these.
The first place for graffiti.
Yeah, Cornbread was one of the first graffiti writers. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. He painted on an elephant in the Philadelphia Zoo.
What?
Yeah. He
Oh, for real? I thought somebody painted on a school.
He and his crew. Yeah, they did walls too. But he and his crew like broke into the Philadelphia Zoo and painted on an elephant in
Could
the Philadelphia
anybody
zoo.
Feel bad for crazy. The elephant?
Sure, but I think
okay.
it's tough high.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, and it was beautiful.
Are,
and
yeah.
Shout out Cornbread,
yeah.
You know,
shout
super
out.
Legend.
So
and shout out Philly, but so that is in part like the musical tradition that you I feel like are also like actively currently participating
Definitely.
In. Is that? I mean, what at the time was called maybe neo soul, but is more expansive than that.
Yeah, yeah. I think even when I was growing up, so like my foster mom, she was way older. So the only thing that I was like listening to was like Isley Brothers, The Stylistics, Teddy Pendergrass. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Patti LaBelle. Like this is all.
That's a foundation.
It was
though.
Crazy, and I didn't. The crazy part about it is I didn't know that these people were from Philly. Like you know what I'm saying? Like I didn't know the Gambling Huff. I didn't know any of these things that were going on. I just remembered her listening to this. Over and over again, and I was like, yo, this is getting annoying. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because it was the same tapes. It wasn't like it was different
right.
albums.
Wouldn't
it was
flip
the
it up.
Exact same tapes.
None of that new Isley Brothers.
It was crazy,
that's
bro.
Funny.
Oh my God. But yeah, so that's what I grew up on. And then later on, when I tried to like get out into my own, get out on my own, I think I gravitated more to the Bilal's, the Music Soul Child's, the. I think Jill Scott, of course, Chrisette Michelle, like all of these guys. But then after that, the hip hop scene itself was popping. Beanie Siegel, State Property, P. Crack, all of these guys or whatever like that. Philadelphia Freeway. that scene was going somewhere too. So it was just all of these different bubbles that I was able to exist in. I mean, that at that time, it was fun when I was a kid to be a Philly rapper. There was like Reed Dollars was in the battle rap scene, and all of these other guys, Joey Jihad. Like when I came to Chicago, that's the first thing that people was asking me about, like, yo, you know Joey Jihad? I'm like, you know what I'm saying? So like that was like really what was like moving me at the time.
So how did you first get involved with wanting to make music? Were you writing song? Were you writing raps?
But like, did you figure out you could sing?
I didn't figure out I could sing until like, well, I was singing in choirs, and I was always doing like solos and stuff like that. But I was always mad nervous, and then I always like was like super annoyed at my voice. And I think primarily it was because I thought my twin sister was the singer and I was like the rapper. I thought that was like going to be our thing. She was going to sing and I was going to rap. But then I later on realized like she couldn't really sing like that. You know what I'm saying? And
your twin sister.
Yeah, my twin sister. She couldn't really sing like that. It was cool. She knows that. She owns that.
Damn, yeah. You're not like putting on a bus. You can't sing.
No.
She got
like
a record
that.
Coming out.
No. Okay. Like, let me. Let me bring that back. I believe that everyone can sing. I believe that everyone has a voice. Everyone. No, I really do believe this. I believe like, because if you ever listen to a crowd of people sing, like if I was to tell a crowd of people like everybody sing these lyrics, it sounds beautiful.
No, but that's because I'm in that mug shutting the fuck up though. That's why.
No, but
also because it's a moment and you're like, yeah, feeling yourself and.
No, wherever if you ever hear a choir of kids, all of those kids can't like sing, right. But like for some odd reason, if you tell a choir,
like harmonize
kids, for some odd reason, your voice finds a way to just fit in. You know what I'm saying?
That.
So
okay.
I believe that everyone has a voice. You just have to find what your voice is. The majority of people who don't sound like they can sing, it's primarily because they try to do things that their voice can't do or that they haven't like exercised. You know? That's just my opinion.
It was a beautiful sentiment.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
So you were rapping.
I was rapping. I was writing. I didn't know what I was writing at first. I knew that something was drawing me towards music. I was like one of those kids. We had like a boombox, so I feel like I'm like super old, but I'm not.
Like
but
if,
no, you're really not.
You know what I'm saying? But it's like we had a boombox that I would like make tapes off of because like we didn't have like. I mean, like I said, my foster mom was super old, so she like had this like boombox that I was like making tapes off of, and I was like going upstairs, and she wouldn't give me a CD player. I had a Walkman still, but I was like going upstairs,
right.
And I was still like rapping over these beats and stuff like that. But like, or not even beats because they were songs,
right.
that I would just like pick up and just rap.
Talk louder than
exactly. And I was like, oh, this is going crazy. But it started off. My sister's IKEA. It started off like everybody on my block was like. Actually rapping, and then somewhere along the line I was like I'm better than these guys, you know. And it wasn't like in a cocky way. I just like I was writing, you know what I'm saying. I had like 5 notebooks. I felt like I could do that shit. And so the next thing I know, I just started battling everybody on my block, and then that happened.
And winning?
Yes, I was going crazy.
Okay.
I lost a couple times, though.
But,
I'm not going to hold
you, yeah, sure. Can you spit something right now?
I cannot.
Oh, okay.
Cannot or won't not? Or will not?
I won't not.
Can y'all battle right now?
Wow.
Exactly. Talking about, but can this battle happen?
Look, we asked you here today.
Battle of the
exactly.
cities.
Exactly.
Philly versus Chicago.
I mean, come on.
Okay.
I really don't want it. Anyway,
oh,
the point. Hey, hey, okay. Listen.
I'm gonna leave
listen. Listen, it's getting real explosive. Boom, boom, boom.
We did need sound effects.
Exactly.
You stayed in the foster care system with your sister?
Yes. Yes. I stayed in until I think the age of, I want to say like 14 or like 15. And I ran away from my foster home. Because I was being abused. And so when I ran away and I went to a shelter, and I was staying at a shelter for a while, and my mentor, or he was almost like my goddad, my mentor in like a big brother situation, he ended up taking me in.
Was he your teacher or something?
He was my teacher.
Yeah,
he was my teacher. He was my my grade school teacher, my middle school teacher, I'm sorry. And for like 1 year, he taught me like social studies and stuff, and I hated him as a teacher. Like hated him, like despised him as a teacher. I would always like mess up in his class. He like kicked me off the basketball team because I like got like a I think a C in his class or something like that. It was crazy.
Damn.
But he was always like super, super fresh, like wearing Sean John and like Rockaway and shit like
hey.
That. It was crazy. He was flea. So
which, yeah,
Kevin's about to be much like me.
No. I was going to say much like, because you stay pulling fits off.
That's
you
true.
Know? No. Those
yo,
are facts.
We all got forces on. I'm just say that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, you know what I'm saying? Exclusive forces. Yeah,
give us that sponsorship.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. We need it. So I think I was at the shelter for a while and, they were about to send me to a group home called Glen Mills. And if I went there, I would have to finish high school there and, be in high school there. And they wouldn't allow me to. After that, he just kind of saw me, like, getting whisked up into the system. And he didn't want that to happen. So he asked if there was any possible way that he could take me just for the weekend and hopefully integrate me back into the house via family therapy and a bunch of other things. So he picked me up and I went there for what was supposed to be a weekend, went to his house for like for what was supposed to be a weekend, and we went to family therapy and she never showed up. And when she never showed up, the therapist was basically like, you can keep him because she obviously doesn't care, you know. And then after that, the rest was history. A weekend turned into a month turned into a year turned into 3 years.
Did he adopt you?
No, not legally.
Okay.
But that's my dad. Like, I wouldn't, and no one else is my dad. That's my father.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? If you saw him and you saw me, you wouldn't even ask the question. His family, like, comes around him and was like, hey, I remember when you was little. I was like, no, you don't. But, like, I just let it ride.
Right.
Now. Like, now it's
damn
just
near.
Like, yeah. It's
but
like,
I remember I saw him at the Soho show you were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. That was the first time I met you.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so your sister at this time, you guys were still in touch. She was still in the home.
Yeah. So I was in foster care with, we went through the system together from.
And is it just the two of y'all?
No, it was my twin sister and my big sister, Zakiya. So we were all in the system together, like kind of floating around. What I found out later on was the majority of my sisters were. I have like 9 sisters and the majority of them were either in foster care or
did you know about all of them?
I didn't.
Oh,
I didn't
wow.
know about them until later on. The crazy part about it is my sister found my other sisters when I had ran away.
She's like
on some crazy shit, like the Paganos. Which is crazy. The Paganos is a steak place that's right down on like 77th and Ogons. It's like right on Ogons Avenue in Philadelphia, if you ever go there. And there's a nail salon like right next to it. And she was walking out of there and someone was yelling Zarifa. And my name is Zarif and her name is Zarifa. There's not too many Zarifas. Like, you're not going to find them. And they were like, yo, Zarifa. And she turned around. And she was like, she saw somebody else yelling this name, and she was like, what the hell? And she was like, who the hell is she talking to? So she just happened to go up to her and was like, is your name? Someone was calling my sister, and then the woman came back, and she was like, is your name Zarifa? And she was like, yeah. She was like, what? I think you're my daughter's sister. And then the next thing I know, I think my sister called me and was like, hey,
I'm at daughter's sister, is that not her daughter?
No. We have different mothers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have the same father. And then she was like, I think you're my daughter's sister. And that next week, and I think we met like under an underpass or some shit, like on the side of expressway. And
very
I met like
shady.
All my I met like all my sisters. Like they just all hopped out of a car.
Jeez, y'all all crazy. Look alike.
Yes. Yes.
Is one of them also like two of them named Zarifa? Is that
no, Zarifa
on?
Is a kid. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's so many sisters.
Yeah, Zarifa, Zakiya, Sheena, Nadine, Tamika, another Zarifa.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Yeah. So there's two
Zarifas.
Oh,
that's crazy.
Shamira, Sheena.
Ooh, I like all these names, though.
Yeah,
okay.
It's crazy. Yeah. And Jamila. That's nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were how old when you got reunited with them?
When I got reunited with them, I would say 15, 16. Yeah, 15, 16.
And then you lived with your dad.
I was living with my dad until like I moved to Chicago, which was about 3 years.
And what brought you to Chicago?
Chicago, actually. Like, Chicago brought me here. At the time, Lupe Fiasco was my favorite rapper. And crazy story. I met Lupe on a plane ride to go to audition at Berkeley to go to school.
It's in Boston, right?
Yeah, in Boston. So I was going to Boston. He was going to Boston for a show. I was going to Boston to audition at Berkeley. And then he was like, you know, I think I was downloading something on my dad's computer, like off a LimeWire in the airport or some shit, or like something weird. And I like closed the laptop. It was like a piracy commercial or some shit. Like I closed the laptop and it was like Lupe sitting right there. I was like, oh shit.
Redownloading his music.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like Fahrenheit 9/11. It wasn't like, you know, I was.
But you were really downloading
his music? Yeah, I was really downloading his music.
Hilarious.
Directly right there.
Did you go to be like, what, I mean?
I didn't go up to him. My dad went up to him. My dad was like.
Oh, you were with your dad.
Yeah, my dad was like, hey, Mr. Fiasco.
What up? Yeah, no.
My son's a huge fan. He's
currently
right
illegally downloading.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. He's right over there. He wants to meet you, but he's a little nervous. And I was like, oh my God. So then after that, my dad, I just see my dad's hand. Like,
salutes to
that's
your
such a
pops,
thing.
Yeah,
right.
He went crazy. And so he did that, and then I walked over and we talked, and I asked him for an autograph, but he was like, yo, I'm not going to give you an autograph. I want to have a conversation with you. I was like, true. I was like, cool. So we just talked about a bunch of stuff. My dad was like talking to his manager, and he was like, what schools are you looking at? And I was like, Berkeley and Columbia and Chicago. And he was like, go to Chicago. And I was like, true. And he was like, nah, like, I don't even know about that school, but go to Chicago. And I was like, all right, bet. And I think
that's
like,
such Chicago shit too.
Yeah, like, right. Like I have no reason.
I literally have no idea, but Chicago.
But go there.
Yeah.
And so I think like right after that, my dad, he sent me on like hella college tours and shit like that. So we we were going to Berkeley just to audition and see the school in general. But he was like, yo, let's go to Chicago anyway to see that. And I remember landing here, and I was like 17, and I was like, yo, I need to be here. It was freezing cold. I didn't have the right jacket. It was like ridiculous. It was like early, I want to say March or something like that. And I was just like, yo, I don't even need to see this school. I want to be in Chicago. This shit seems dope. This seems like where I'm supposed to be.
Wow.
And after the rest of that was history.
So this is what year?
This was, I think, 2008. 2007, yeah.
And did you come to go to school at Columbia?
I came to go to school at Columbia, yeah.
In that coming fall or over the summer?
Yep.
And did you come to Columbia to study music?
Yeah, I was studying music business.
Yeah. Oh.
What a minor in sociology is. Fucking
You're not
weird.
Trying to sing?
No.
Oh, true.
Wait, at that time, were you...
No, I wasn't singing at that time.
But you were auditioning
rhyming?
At Berkeley.
Right.
I was. Crazy part about it is I went up to Berkeley and I rapped.
Oh, true.
Which is
so
wild.
You're not going to spit.
Okay. Nah.
Maybe we'll see.
I know you keep talking about rapping.
Enough James Harden gummies.
I can write.
And
I can
knows?
Write.
You might,
I can,
like, you might get
a
loose.
Little sugar bug might go. You know what I'm saying? Who knows? But nah, like, yeah. So I went up there and I rapped, and it was so crazy because like most of the people on the board like were fucking with me, like, you know. But it was this one dude. He was like, no. He will ruin our department. No. And I was like, damn.
Because they don't really have rappers running up in Berkeley. Yeah,
not at all.
Oh, like, is it like a, I don't know much
It's conservatory.
About.
Yes. I mean, primarily.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did that, but they were like, yo, we like the vibe and the energy that
you
would.
Can you sing, though?
But can I? No, they didn't even ask me that.
Oh,
they just pretty much just was like, yo, we're interested in you, but, you know, we'll have to
but
see.
But nah.
Yeah, and so, like, I think they were all trying to vote overdue, but, like, I didn't really even care. I don't even think I followed up, to be completely honest. Like, I think we came to Chicago, like, literally, like, a week later, and I was like, I want to be here. I don't even care what they said. You know what I'm saying?
And so you're a first-year student in Columbia College.
Yep.
And what was your foray into Chicago's musical scene at that time? This is 07, 08.
Yeah, it was crazy. Cool Kids was popping. Chance was actually moving his mixtapes across the street from my dorm, like, you know what I'm saying? So he had like came across the street a couple times.
These are instrumentality mixtapes.
So like he's like right there. And then after that, what else? Kids These Days was like bopping. I was doing a bunch of, we had this thing at a Columbia called the Biggest Mouth.
Or yeah, Big Mouth. Yeah,
Open
Mic.
So exactly. So I was competing in all of those. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think I was rapping.
I'm just trying to follow this timeline of rap turn singer, you know?
I was rapping. And then, so I think that my. I think my.
Because you can sing, you know? Sing.
All right.
I appreciate it. I think my second day in Columbia, I met Sean Doe. L Boog, and Sean was my connection to Mike, Michael Williams. And
shout out St. Louis.
Shout out St. Louis. You know what I'm saying? And my homie Maze was from Philly. He came up here with me, and we both went to high school together. But we were like, yo, we're going to do music in Chicago. And then there was this other dude named J Class. And these are all, I met all of these guys the second day. I was in the CAF, and I think Sean walked up to me and was like, yo, you look like you rap.
It's crazy. And then you spit.
Also facts, though, a little bit.
You know what I'm saying? he was like, yo, you look like 16. You rap. And he was like, yo, my man make beats. And I was like, who? And he was like, Boog. And then I walked over there, and Boog was like, what's good, man? I make beats or whatever like that. He was like, yo, come up to my room, 17, blase, blase, later on. I was like, oh, I live on the 18th floor. That's lit. I got you. You know what I'm saying? And he was like, all right. So I went up to Lon's room, and it was literally like music coming from his door. And then I opened the door, and it was like a rap video. It was like girls in there dancing and shit. And he was just like playing beats off his laptop.
Was there like smoke?
To me, in my eyes, right. It felt like it
maybe
was
maybe there was
smoke,
like a smoke machine.
He it was like smoke, smoke and like a blue light, but it wasn't. It was just like a normal dorm room with just him playing music and like three girls in there dancing. It was just very
that's
crazy.
Funny.
And, you know, and then after that, I mean, we were just running around Columbia just making music with anybody that we could, you know.
Well, that becomes in some ways the part of the foundation for them people.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah. So because I'm you know, we talk a lot about community in Chicago, and mm-hmm. and so who is them people, who comprises them people, and is that kind of when that squad began to form?
Yes, that all of the main players and them people started right then and there. But it was me, Mike, Sean, and Lon. And I think later on we went by a crazier name during that time, but we
are you going to
do
share?
Tell
I will not mention that name.
Oh,
really?
Well,
no corner store exclusive.
Right.
I can't. I don't want nobody
rude
digging
of you really? To hold back.
I don't want nobody digging down those
all
crates.
Right. We'll get some
me,
of the guys.
Yeah, off the
we'll
record.
Get, we'll get
later.
Some of the other guys on, and we'll try to see if we can get it out of them.
Pretty, if they mention
it was that bad,
crazy. It was bad.
Yeah,
it was bad. It was just like it was going along with like the times, like you know, like it was a very moment.
Oh.
It's funny because at that moment you probably think it's like amazing.
At that time everybody thought it was
yeah
dope.
Right.
And so you have you so like a kid or people. A young in there maybe?
I was definitely young.
Oh
yes, I was yes. definitely a young.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, youngs are always good. Young Noodle Cup.
Hey,
that's my rap name.
That's yeah, Tara's rap.
Oh, I don't rap.
16 battle.
Let's get it.
That's really what? Why Tara invited
yeah.
you in.
Yeah. Exactly. Just to start this beef.
Exactly.
I got it. Let's
yeah.
do it.
Young
yeah,
Noodle versus
young.
Young
Mind.
Not
or Young Mind.
I mean, you guys already know my name, Young Zig. It was Young Zig.
Oh, I was it's actually going to just say that. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. That's okay. Yeah, well, that's actually not as bad as
not
it.
Bad.
Yeah.
No.
Not bad at all.
I mean, because you guys know me as Zig, but if you didn't know Zig and it was just like Young Zig, weak as hell.
Yeah. Don't love it as a rap name. I will be
no,
honest.
No.
Yeah.
As like a homie, like, oh no, this
yeah,
is Young
like,
Zig.
This a homie.
Yeah.
Nah.
True.
I can't go with that.
So, but then people becomes a really influential crew for the new wave of the Chicago sound.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. How soon did you guys realize that you were, I mean, it just, you were homies beginning to make music together?
Yeah, yeah. We were homies that began, but like, I will always say that Mike was like, the band leader. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? When I first met him, he was like one of the coldest rappers that I had ever met. You know, still is. Like, you know what I'm saying? And one of the coldest musicians in general. Like, just his approach to this entire shit was just like, it taught me damn near everything that I know now, you know what I'm saying? And but like, so he put it in our brains that we should because we weren't from here, that we should become a service to the rest of this.
Because Lon's from Milwaukee, right?
Lon's from Milwaukee. We were all transplants. Yeah. Lon's from Milwaukee. Sean and Mike are from St. Louis. So
smart.
Yeah,
so smart. Though.
Yeah. So they were. Yeah. He was like, "Yo, we should be a service. Like we can't take anything from this scene. We haven't done anything to deserve that.
Right.
So we have to give all we can." So that was free studio time. That was Lon free mixing. That was
wow.
know free developmental meetings. Everything. Like it was a bunch of stuff.
And who were some of the people that you all were beginning to work with in that era?
At that time, it was early No Name. It was early Tokyo. Early Kami. Early Caleb James. Early Joey Perp. Early like you name them. Like they were coming through.
But how did you meet these people?
We were just in the scene, like you know
okay.
what I'm saying. So we would just
going
pop
to shows
up.
And
yeah, yeah. I think Lon met Caleb and them very early because we moved to 525 State Street. And we were living right on that corner. Not 525. I feel like that's a Jay-Z lyric. But like, I think it was 5. Was it 525? It's directly on the corner of where that McDonald's is on Chicago and State. We lived right there. Like, right above the train stop. Like, you come up out
of
the red
line. Is that a dorm or is that just an apartment?
No, it was an apartment.
Oh, wow.
We got it, like, right after the dorm or whatever like that. So, we were living there. I had actually moved back to Philly for a small period of time. I think this is around, like, 2010 or something like that. I moved back to Philly. I, like, ran out of money and was, like, killing myself, basically, like, yeah. You know, in Chicago.
The tale of every Columbia College student,
period.
Damn near.
Yeah, you know? So I was, like, homeless on my homie's couch, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was, like, really falling apart, like, having mental breakdowns. I had only, like, thinking back on it now, just being older, I could see, like, yo, I was super young. I had only lived with my dad for 3 years. I didn't really figure this world out yet. I didn't figure out who I was, you know, so I had to, like, I needed a reset. You know, I was scared when I finally got out to Chicago, all these other things. But to go back to the story, so we were living at 525 on Chicago and State, and we had a crib right there, and I think Caleb and them wanted somebody to go in the store and, like, buy them blunts, and they saw a bug, and they was like, yo, can you go in the store and, like, buy us blunts or whatever like that? And he was like, he, like, looked at him and was like, yeah, sure. Like, you know what I'm saying? And bought them blunts and, like, then went upstairs and he was like, you mind if we smoke with y'all? Like, you know what I'm saying? And then the rest was history. And then they realized, like, he did music and that was the crib. And next thing you know, everything else started falling in line.
And what were you doing at the time in that mix?
In that mix, I was coming back and forth. I had got a job in Philly when I was working with people with mental disabilities and physical handicaps, and I was a job coach. And
yes, I remember this from the Noisy story.
I was a job coach. Yeah. So I was transitioning high school students at the time, high school students at the time who had mental disabilities into the workforce. So I was doing that, but, like, I was making bank, you know what I'm saying? But it was, like, also, like, that was, I always say that that was the year that taught me patience, you know? And I was flying back and forth and just seeing the homies and, like, seeing everything that was going on here. So I was, like, missing for that year. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I was coming back, recording records and stuff like that. And we were just, like, working on stuff.
As a rapper or as a singer?
As a rapper.
Okay.
I was still a rapper at the time.
So you're doing it too? Trying to keep track of when he becomes a singer.
Yeah, right, yeah. So I was still rapping. I was still coming back and working on stuff. At that time, we made I can't. If I say the tape, if I say all of the
things. We'll go find it. We'll find the crew name.
And then it's just all. Yeah.
So is this like debut tape or something? Or?
It was. It was our debut tape.
Were you guys as called the people? Kid Cats?
No.
What?
No.
A lot of kids. That's all I'm saying.
No, so we did that. When I came back, I saw all of these things that was bubbling over. Well, not even bubbling over, but I just saw
2010-11?
2010-11.
Yeah, okay. So Chicago is also, like, really beginning to be
exactly.
Fire.
And I'm like, damn, like, I want to be back in Chicago. Like, I was like, this is not where I'm supposed to be. I loved my kids. I loved everybody, everything that I was working on. But I was, like, super young, and I was just like, yo, I just need to be back in Chicago. And I call it, like, a blessing because literally I got called by a cover band. And they were like, yo, we heard about you via Blase Blase, and we want you to be the lead man for a cover band. And I was like, what? And it was like, we'll fly you back to Chicago. And I was like, Chicago? I was like, stop it. Literally, I think a week later, they flew me out to Chicago. And he was like, yo, do you bang with it? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, we'll help you move into a crib and all this other stuff. And I was like, what? What the hell is going
on? Sounds too good to be true.
Yeah, it was like, I was like, what the hell is going on? I go back to Philly. I'm like, yo, Dad, I'm going back to Chicago. So I, like, packed up. I had a car at the time. Packed up the car, drove back to Chicago, and, like.
You quit your job?
I did. I gave my 2 weeks notice, and I think I moved back 2 weeks after that, and I was back in Chicago.
And what kind of cover band?
It was a top 40s cover band.
So you were?
Singing.
Damn! Wait, so when you were rapping, were you, like, sing rapping or you just rapping?
Yeah, but I think the game itself was moving in that direction.
Yeah,
I think
a lot of people curious.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were singing and rapping. I think everybody in the crew was singing and rapping. And then I just kind of, that was something that I was always scared of. That's where the mind came from. because it was and if you look at some of my earlier pictures with the Mind, I had two separate Twitters. I had the Mind Twitter and I had my personal Twitter.
I have a question about Twitter, but we can get to that.
Oh, true. I've kind of
you know what it is.
Yeah, but I had two Twitters. One was the Young Zig Twitter, which was my personal profile.
I'm a rapper. Yeah.
Basically. And then I had the Mind Twitter, which was like my face was covered, my eyes were covered, everything you really
deep.
Didn't know. Yeah. No, but it wasn't supposed to be that. It was like literally a superhero that I had created in my own head that I could like do whatever I wanted because I kept on feeling like I had to exist in this hip hop world. I had to exist as a rapper. I had to be this. Like I wasn't comfortable in my voice. I wasn't comfortable in all these different things. And then the next thing I know, I was like, let me just try it over here. And then I remember doing things and I was still rapping underneath the Mind. I think it was originally Mind Flawed. And it was like that was the name. And then afterwards I just kind of like, I just shed the flawed and was like, I'm just the Mind. And then it was like, it was funny because every time I see Vic, he always like walks up to me talking about the mind's flawed. And he just does it because I did that like 50 times on one song.
So what's the name of the cover band?
Can't give you that.
OK,
either.
So what was the name you went by with the cover band?
Young Zig.
Young Zig. Oh, okay.
I was Young Zig in the cover band. You'll probably
did you feel like comfortable because it was you were covering other people's music to sing? Like what was?
Yes. Yes, it's so much easier. Like what I realize now, like it's so much easier to perform someone else's feelings. You know, if that makes any sense.
Maybe it's like acting or something.
It is.
Yeah.
I love acting, and that was easy. I could be Kanye one moment, be this guy the next moment. I didn't care. Like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I was Neo this second. Like, like all these, like, it didn't matter to me. It was just like, yo, this is dope. I could, like, keep on jumping in different lanes.
You must have been developing your range then in that time to do top 40
Definitely.
Songs and run a register that was so, diverse.
Yes and no, because I don't think I really took it serious until a little bit afterwards. Because even when doing the top 40s, the places that we were doing it, these cover shows, because it was a touring cover band, but the places that we were doing these shows at, they didn't care. Like, right. They weren't really caring. Like, we were doing 3-hour sets. Like, you know, three hours everywhere. What's the casino? Rivers Casino.
Oh. So that's real bread though, right?
Yeah, it was a healthy little
I was
check.
Wondering how they have like all that money to fly you out here, get you a crib.
It was crazy. It was
Young Zig. I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's what he's doing.
He got the raps.
when I was in the band, I was like the youngest in the band. Or the second youngest, and I kind of, no pun intended, but I started realizing the dedication of some of the band members, there's a cover world in Chicago that is not even like touched by us, like we don't even see it. They exist, they're huge.
Oh, they grind and they get paid.
They go crazy.
Yeah, they play casinos? Weddings. They play
weddings, casinos, street festivals.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, and for a long time, I think like Chicago musicians got by
being in
that
crazy.
Route. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, what's the difference between tribute band and a cover band?
A tribute band is dedicated
just one
to one
band.
Specific
okay.
artist. Yeah, cover bands cover everything. And so the cover world was like crazy. And then I started seeing all these different things, and I was like, yo, I don't want to be known for playing other people's
right.
music.
But what was your favorite song to perform?
My favorite song to perform. I didn't have one.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have one. I think the song that was probably like the most, it wasn't as fun for me as it should have been.
Mm.
You know, if that makes any sense. Me doing that was just like, yo, you're this close to being a real musician. Like,
yeah, right. You're not
you know
making your own.
Yeah.
Shit.
Like, and it just kind of like was always like hurting my soul. Like anytime that I would sing a song, I was like, yo, this is one of my favorite artists, but like
it's not me.
It's like going corporate.
Yeah.
So were you writing your own songs at this time that were raps?
Yeah, I never stopped writing music. I was always writing music. I was still writing raps. I was still doing my own songs. I think when I
Battling on the Block.
Nah, I wasn't battling no more.
I'm tired, you know. Let that crown.
My crown.
Let that shit finish.
I was winning
every now and then. Shine it up though.
I was still battle rapping when I came up to Chicago. When I got to Columbia, I was still going. But I chilled out.
Who'd you take out? You want to talk about names? You know what I'm saying?
It's a couple of people. I ain't gonna mention their names.
You don't want to hurt their feelings. You don't want to take the recording contract.
Listen. If they got a recording contract, it's probably mine.
It's probably got my name. It's probably got Young Zig on it.
Probably got Young Zig next to it. Co-writer.
I'm your ghostwriter.
So at what
point did you step away and you're like, I guess when did you become
you?
Yeah.
Well, I think it happened around the waters. What's that, like 2012?
Yes.
Yeah, it happened around the waters. Hey. I think it happened.
Shout out Mick.
Wait, when did you meet Mick?
We were living on 18th Street.
So you were with them people?
We were with them people. And we were living on 18th Street and we were living in the loft right on the corner of like 18th and Ruble.
Mm.
Where we had the gallery.
Oh,
show.
Yes, yeah. Upstairs.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Rootwork.
Yeah, Rootwork.
And we were right in the back. We were living out there. We had a studio out there, and Mick came through. I think with Via, the first time,
right? Because Via was kind of like part of y'all too for a bit, right?
Yes, definitely. The Them People brand is strong. Like, I mean, it became like almost like a last name. Like right now, I would say the Them People producers are Mike and L Boog and Sean Doe. Like, those are the producers, you know what I'm saying? But
like, the core, right?
Exactly. But Them People was like a last name. We're a family, like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's a bunch of people in there. Jossie Kamal, like, Via Rosa. Like, it's just a bunch of people. And so I think I met Mick, and I was, like, singing something in the background. It was Shipwrecked, actually. And I was singing something in the background of the studio, and he, like, kind of heard me or whatever like that. And he was like, yo, I don't know what that is, but do that. And I was like, all right, cool. So I did that. And then after that, we just finished that song. Like, you know what I'm saying? And that was just that. It was, you know, that wasn't unnatural. We had done plenty of songs with a bunch of artists who had came through. So it wasn't like this was different.
But that was a song that particularly popped. That was an album that particularly popped.
Definitely. Definitely.
So people, I mean, because that was, I think, the first time I probably heard read your name
on
a record, like, and I was like, who is dude?
Yeah
on this record.
Yeah and he was getting that response, and I was getting that response,
right?
And that was like the first time that I had, like, that someone was noticing me from my singing,
right?
And like,
that must have felt gratifying.
It was I think every artist looks for validation in some way, shape, or form, like, you know what I'm saying? And I think, like, I deal with insecurities as anyone does, but like, I was dealing with a bunch of insecurities and was like, I wasn't comfortable with my voice. So then it was like, you know, a bunch of artists were coming in like, yo, can you sing this hook for me? Yo, can you do this, that, and that? And next thing I know, like, I was like, oh, snaps. And then I got an email from Mick and DJ Dahi, and it was for Dehydration. And it was like, he was like, yo, and it was like, it said DJ Dahi featuring you, nigga. And I was like, who the fuck is you, nigga? And I was like, the entire time, so I'm listening to the song, and there's like a blank part. And I'm like, oh, he's talking about me. and I was like, what? And so, like, I literally, I did Dehydration, and I sent it back, and he went crazy. He was like, yo, like, this shit's fucking raw. And I titled it. I read DJ Dahi, but I'm like kind of dyslexic, so I instantly was like, I said Dehydration. I don't know where that came from. It just like kind of happened like that, and I sent it back as Dehydration, and next thing I know, that was the name of the song.
That's dope.
And then the rest was history. After that, like, he was just like, yo, you're super raw. I remember he went on tour with No Name Saba and Kurt Knight, I think, at the end of that year.
Could you imagine that tour right now?
That was
true. Like, that's amazing.
And I was livid, because I was like, yo, I want to go on that tour. I was like, yo, can I go on this tour with y'all? And he was like, we don't got the money, bro. Like, and I was like, true shit. But like, I was like begging, hoping that they was like, yeah. Last minute, nah, didn't happen.
So when was because you went out on the road?
The next tour.
Okay.
Yeah, the next tour I went.
And that was the first time that you toured as you?
As me, yeah. The first time. So the next tour after that, it wasn't even a tour, it was South By. He asked me to go to South By with him.
What year is this?
Excuse me.
2013?
2013, yeah. He asked me to go South By. He was like, yo, come South By with me. And and like just like, you know, sing backgrounds or whatever. And I was like, yeah, for sure. You know what I'm saying? So I went and it was pretty dope. It was like the first time that I had like, you know, seen a lot of this shit or whatever like that. And I was like, yo, this is kind of crazy. I realized how big Mick was at that time. And so then we did that. And then I think a little bit after we did that, he was like, yo, come on tour with me. And I was like, for sure. Like, let's do it. You know what I'm saying? And so then we did the tour.
And this is in support of what record?
This is The Waters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were touring for The Waters. He gave me, he was going on tour with Stu, and he was doing a co-headlining thing, and he took me as the opener and his homie J Stock. And so like I was in the band, but I was also I was also opening up as well.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah. So,
and so at what point do you realize you're going to then work on your own? Like, how soon in your mind does summer camp appear? Do you start working on that record?
I think summer camp was, I had been working on summer camp for a while. Me and we had the way that we had the studio set up was that we had sessions with like actual paying clients, and then for us to be able to pay rent and stuff, and then we also had sessions with like individuals in which we felt like, you know, needed like to, you know, the time and space to be able to like work on their project. So we kind of just got in where we fit in. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes that was like a Sunday in 3 hours, sometimes that was like, you know, a Monday in like 4 hours, sometimes it was a night, and you know, all the way through then, you know, up until like 6 a.m you know what I'm saying? So I was doing that, and I was recording all of these songs, so all of these songs weren't like completely falling into place the way that they needed to. So I still wasn't as confident as I needed to be with those, but I had records though. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I had like a couple of records that I had already like poked at, and I was like, all right, these are dope. You know what I'm saying? Like, these will work. And then I finally, I came to the conclusion, like, okay, this could be something, when I met my manager, who's Mick's manager and also No Name's manager.
John.
Yeah. Jean-Pierre Louis.
Yes, you know, he's from Toronto.
He's Montreal. From Montreal. Yeah, and I met him, and he was just like, yo, send me what you got. You know what I'm saying? And I sent him a bunch of stuff, and he was like, yeah, this could go. Like, you know what I'm saying? You could do something with this. You know what I'm saying? And
it's interesting working on that album in that capacity, because yeah, it's so rich and textured sonically, mm-hmm, and there's so many different sounds. Yeah. And so I'm also wondering if that's part of the reason.
Definitely.
Because even your maturation from the beginning of working on that record to the release in 2016, the, yeah, record drops.
Last year, which is crazy.
Yeah, which is wild, because yeah, it's been... That's been a whole another trajectory then for you since, right, the release of that record.
Definitely.
I listened to that record. I was in Michigan. I go to Michigan to teach over the summer in Ann Arbor and Detroit. And that week that I was teaching the record, I feel like that's when I had the opportunity to really listen to it, mm-hmm, driving between Ann Arbor and Detroit. And it's song to song. It's so beautiful and so different, mm-hmm, and there's a mood that you set throughout the record, but you recorded it over a few years.
Yeah.
And so I understand that was intentional, but yeah, what did you want and hope people would receive from the record?
I think Summer Camp, when I first started recording, it wasn't Summer Camp. It was another project called Hail and Red Skies. And it was comprised of a whole bunch of other songs and stuff like that. Summer Camp didn't come about until, I think, like the end of 2015. And I kind of realized, like, oh, that's what I'm making. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I listened to it. I'd listened to all of the tracks. They weren't all the way complete, but like I put them in the order that I wanted them to. And I scrapped the name because I was like, that's not it. And then I think towards the end of 2015, beginning of 2016, I did the commentary. Like, I did all of the pieces in between it. And I realized that it was this conversation that I was having with my subconscious, which was who I wanted to. I always say, when you listen to Summer Camp, think of an indie movie, literally what pops across the screen is just like Summer Camp and like yellow letters and across a black screen. And then the movie starts, you know what I'm saying? Where the tea kettle goes off and she runs in the room and like, wake up, get your stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so like kind of try to look at that move or whatever. And for me, The only thing that I wanted out of summer camp was to try to tell myself that it was okay to be myself in any way, shape, or form. I think up until that point, I was terrified to be who I was. Like the mind, I was still hiding behind this name. I was still hiding behind the cloaks and all this other stuff. I was comfortable. And part of it was also because, like, as becoming a group of service, you kind of forget how to lead. We had given so much to people, and I'd always, like, I learned, I almost loved to play the background, you know. And then I started to realize, like, yo, like, I never set out to just play the background. I want to be a front man. I want to tell my story. You know what I'm saying? I want to, like, help people find their mind, I guess. You know what I'm saying? In some shape or form. And so, like,
even the visuals paired with the album are really powerful too. Like, thank that. You. Mercury Rising video.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Kid Super.
Because it was animated, right?
Yeah. It was claymation and stop motion. Kid Super, he
does clothes and stuff, right? Too.
Yeah. But he that was the first music video he had done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the first, like, claymation music video. He had done, like, little small commercials of claymation, but he had never done, like, a full-length video. A video took 7 months to make.
Crazy.
Yeah, and I remember he was like, yeah, I can do this real quick. You know what I'm saying? But, like, the pieces are, like, this big. Like, you know, they're huge. Like
about a foot or so.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm like,
for those watching TV.
Exactly.
Yeah, for those watching gestures. Us right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but, yeah, and he was a... He was going crazy, and I remember we talked about it. And DNS is in that video, DNS and 77 Old Guns, and that we drew the parallel between there and Chicago 18th and Rupel, and it was like kind of the same situation. I was trying to I wanted my sisters to fly out of where they were, the circumstances they were living in. They were still living in the same house. And I wanted to figure out who the hell I was here in Chicago. So, you know, they both fly off at the end of the video.
Are they like little balloons?
Yeah. And we make makeshift spaceships or urban astronauts, as I was calling it. And we were trying to find our way. And I just wanted to help them find their way. I think all of my songs are almost like written letters to my sisters. In a lot of ways, and because I think we deal with all of the same insecurities and same shortcomings, and I think a lot of times we feel like that we're not capable of doing certain things because of where we came from. And I was just talking to somebody about this. Every time someone sees me, they act like they're happy I'm alive. You know, in a weird way. And
talking about in Philly or in Chicago?
In general. Like, you know what I'm saying? And anybody who knows my story, they, like, kind of, like, act like they're happy that I'm, like, just even existing. Like, and I'm like, yo, like, damn, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? The only comparison that I can see, I've seen it recently, and it was on Stranger Things Season 2, and it's the way that they treat Will Byers. And they, like, they just kind of treat him like he articulates it so well. He's like, yo, they just treat me like I'm going to break if they touch me. You know what I'm saying? And I got tired of that feeling. I got tired of people seeing me and being like, hey, man, you okay? Oh, man, you look good, man. Like, I'm like.
They still do that too?
Yes. I'm like, really? I'm grown as hell. Like, I'm fine. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But.
I'm happy you are alive because
same.
You make fresh shit. You know,
you. That's, right.
that is why the record, I feel like, I mean, because after the record, you continued to assist people beautifully.
Definitely.
Many, many more features.
Yeah.
How has it changed for you as a performer, as a writer, as a singer since the release of your own project?
I was dope. I think that a lot of the artists that I wanted to work with after that was crazy. I think we did some, like, very special shit. You know, G Herbo.
Shit.
Yeah, Saba and Joey. A couple more mix songs, No Name. It was just a bunch of people who I, like, admired and loved their stuff, were allowing me to put some of my world onto their records. And that was, like, the dopest thing that someone can ever ask you to do. And a lot of it was just like, hey, bro, what do you feel? Like, go crazy. You know what I'm saying?
So you don't really feel in the background anymore?
No, not at all.
It's a feature, right?
Yeah.
It's a feature. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. And I think now I'm still comfortable, you know, assisting. I like sometimes just doing background vocals or something like that, because I feel like I still am able to bring, you know, my world to their world, but just in a different light. And I think that's dope. So
yeah, I think so too. What are you working on now?
I'm trying to finish up. I have an EP and an album on the way. I want to do a short film. That's the goal. I want that to come soon. But this EP, I'm doing a joint EP with a selection producer called Da P.
Oof.
How do you spell that?
DA/P.
Oh, you did that song with him,
yeah,
right?
Miscommunication.
Okay. Yeah, which yeah, that's
is
a dope song.
Banger.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah. Oh, man. Thank you.
That was on the Spotify, like, best finds of 2017
like
or something.
Like, shit to bang, basically.
I'll send you the name of the playlist, but I found it on there.
That's
yeah.
Lit. Yeah.
But,
that song's special.
Yeah.
You went on tour with EBE.
Yes, I just came off tour with EBE. This year was dope. I went on tour with Jamila. I went on tour with EBE. Like, I went on tour with some beautiful, talented, amazing women this year.
Yeah, that's
and
dope.
It's been like, I went on tour with No Name earlier this year too. Like, we did like a small run. So like, it's wow. been crazy. You know, this tour with EBE was dope though. That was like one of probably my favorite.
They're really dope.
Yeah,
they're really cool.
It was a different crowd. I think every other crowd that I'd been exposed to was like a hip hop crowd or like a it was like a soul crowd. This was like a world music crowd, which was completely different.
Well, they have like a very, their stories look really interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
their background.
They're Cuban French, so their music is insane, you know. So to even just be on the road with them, it was like a completely different audience, and just like, I don't know, it was crazy. Like,
that's cool, though.
To hear that they like bang with my music too,
right? And it broadens your, you know, exposure and all that.
Definitely,
too, so
yeah.
Cool.
And congrats on all the success, man. It's very exciting to
very
watch.
Well deserved.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it really there is no ceilings. You know what I mean? I think everybody is invested and excited for what you will continue to make.
Thank you.
You know, given that, what is inspiring you to make? Like, what are you rocking with right now that you are a fan of, that's motivating you, that maybe you could put us on to?
Apricot Princess, which is what's dude's name? Oh, damn it, I can't remember his name. But the project is called Apricot Princess. Check that shit out. Mm. Super, super fucking.
What was something you've slept on that you know you just
something I
dope.
Slept on? Can I check my Apple Music?
You can do it. You're a grown man. You do whatever you want.
I was like, is this cheating?
No. I just looked up like all of your, because I could remember like your cover image and stuff, but I had to like see it.
Rex like Orange the, County?
Yes. Rex Orange County. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I've heard of
raw,
him.
Man.
So is he actually from Orange County?
No, he's actually from like London or some shit.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
He's fucking dope. I slept on that Crit album, the new Crit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I slept on that very early on. Shit's very fucking raw. Who else? John Bapp. Have you guys ever heard of John the Bapp? He's raw as hell.
John the Bapp?
It's John Bapp.
John Bapp.
Yeah, check him out. Who else do I have in here? I have old shit. I have like Teddy Pendergrass, Whitney Houston.
Hey.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't really sleep on. I try not to sleep on music.
The mind don't sleep.
Yeah, you know.
The mind don't sleep.
Wow,
that's what we've learned here today. What about you read, watch? Like, what else are you like in your?
What am
I doing?
When
you're not,
in my circle. Yeah, I know. Man, I'm on TED Talks. I'm on old artists. Artist watch. What's the damn, I can't even. I hate when I draw blanks like this. Let me see. Let me pull this up on the user.
How you spell John Bapp, though?
JONBAP.
Because I imagine you don't get a ton of time to even, especially on the road.
Nice.
I mean, there's downtime, but you know, it's not like you pull up and be like, oh, let me watch this film.
This was weird. This was the weirdest, not the weirdest, but this was the tour that I had a bunch of brims on. I wore like every hat. I was driving, I was TMing, I was like,
oh wow,
yeah, I was doing everything, like, you know what I'm saying? So
and opening
yeah so playing like a 45 minute set
that you drove to
that I drove
you drove
no.
the tour?
Yeah, we traveled this whole entire tour in a two-door Jeep Wrangler. The first stop was Miami. We drove from Chicago
with
to
eBay?
Miami. Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah.
Because you had your own vehicle, mm-hmm. and your own, who you traveled with, the
with my homie Ben Hickson. He's from Dallas, but he came up to Chicago for a while. He was like definitely messing with them people and stuff. But he was playing guitar and keys. And then we were running track, and also I had a TM who was also acting as a driver, but like, I'm sorry, like
TM tour manager,
tour manager,
not Tara Mahadevan,
but they weren't, you know, but I do not take the term driver lightly anymore.
No. Like, that is a real job.
Yeah, that is a real drive. Like I said, a real drive.
Drives.
That is a real drive job. Like.
That's why people are employed to do so.
To just drive.
Shout out to my pops, who's an Uber driver.
Hey, go crazy. Okay. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because that shit
is for real. Yeah.
Like, we drove from Miami. I mean, we drove to Chicago to Miami, which is, I think, is like 20 hours.
At least. Probably 20, it was maybe
like,
longer. Depending.
I think it was like 25 when we finished.
To where?
To Miami. Chicago to Miami.
Bye.
So Chicago to Miami. Then nope. We went up the entire East Coast all the way up to Montreal. Drove all the way up to Montreal and
then came
back down to Toronto, then came back down to Detroit, Chicago, then went across to the West Coast went to, I think, Seattle, and then came
but
down.
Y'all like
the
traded
West Coast.
Off. No, you did most of the driving.
We yes. Like my homie Aaron went at first, and he was like, and then I traded off, and then my homegirl who actually let me borrow the car was Andrea Wickman. She like then like started. She came on tour like after the Chicago date, and she was like TMing and driving, but she's not a driver, so like
yeah,
you gotta
have a real knack for those long distances.
Oh my god! So I was like, we were like, my manager was advancing shows, but like I was like getting there and being like, oh yeah, we don't have nothing on the rider, we don't have this, that, and the third, like.
We don't know shit about touring.
I was booking a hotel. I was booking all the hotels, Airbnbs, everything. Yeah. That was all on me. Like I was, and so
first time, right?
Yeah, that was the first time that I went out on a tour without a homie, without like friends that I know. What do you mean?
Why didn't you bring
I'm saying like going on tour with like a fellow Chicago musician,
right,
or like
right,
a musician that I had known, like, you know, that was like, oh yeah, you can jump on a bus with us or you can jump in the Sprinter with us.
Yeah,
like, that wasn't like
you're
that was like no
yeah you we have you. Our world
this is us and this is you,
good luck to you.
Exactly,
be at the show.
I remember it.
Let us not fire you.
Exactly. I remember that their TM hopped off their bus, their tour manager hopped off their bus.
You can say TM now.
Yeah, at this point we could. It's not Tarma David, it's
not me. I'm not everyone's tour manager.
And it's not.
I'm not everyone's Tarma David.
It also doesn't stand for the mind.
Exactly. Hey.
Oh, hey. Mine's better. Okay.
Wow. See, always battling. Young Noodle Cub, always ask
Let's
you.
Do it. Yeah. Look, I'm ready now.
Oh, okay.
Wait, but I had an interesting fact. Did you know you could drive from Canada all the way to the tip of South America? You can drive.
Like straight down?
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
I know.
Can't wait for that tour.
I'm not doing that.
Okay.
I'm not driving anymore. That's
but
done.
Like, can you imagine being in a car with somebody?
This tour inspired me to make
never
sure
drive?
That.
And it also probably is done, right? I mean,
I'm not doing that.
You do that to in your first joint, and then now you know more and you know better.
Yes.
And then you get rich and teed.
That's right.
And then that is the whole.
And then you never return our phone calls, and that's good. I'm looking forward to that.
Hey Zig, hey Zig.
I hit you back.
No, I know. That's amazing. We're excited for when you won't. You know what I mean?
I'm
excited when Zig.
So I can't imagine what will happen next.
Well,
I already have like two phones now to like ring all at the same time. I like attach things to my watch and my iPad to be like, hey, like I see it ringing now, like I'm gonna do something about it.
Well, we really are excited for all that, man, and thank you so much for, you know, spending some time with us tonight.
Thank you guys for having me. This has been dope.
Shout out DJ Exist for the beat and Langston Austin for the artwork. The Corner Store is recorded at the WGN Radio Studios and produced by Mike Heideman. I'm Marlena, the co-producer, and I also run social media, so follow us at Shy Corner Store on Twitter and IG.